Good afternoon. I'll call the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee to order. Representative Norton, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes of April 15th? Is that correct?
I have, and they're quite accurate.
Well, thank you, Representative Norton. Representative Norton moves the minutes April 15th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no? Motion prevails. Thank you.
April 20th.
Oh, April 20th. Corrected. I stand corrected. You didn't do a very good job of reviewing those April 20th. Okay. Members, today we will be doing the having conversations, continual conversations on the Representative Smith's Real ID bill. And what I would like to remind all of our testifiers, our members, is that we will be discussing items that have to do the purview of this committee, the transportation. This bill has also gone to government operations. It has gone to civil law, where they spoke at in depth on data practices and also on rulemaking. So to that point, any testifier who would like to discuss those, we feel that we've heard that, and the bill is also, if it does pass through this committee, will be going to Ways and Means, where there will be more opportunity as well. So to that, we would ask you to have your testimony only apply to the basically what we'll be talking about is the funding area, and that's where we will go. So. And Representative Smith. Representative Smith, I will move House File 3959. And as I said, this would be moved as we pass to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Smith, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Good afternoon. This bill makes our current licensing system compliant with the federal ID requirements laid out in the 2005 law. Specifically, this bill repeals the planning portion and the implementation portion of the 2009 Minnesota State law. It makes our rulemaking expedited for the next until the end of 2017, and it allows the implementation to begin October of 2016. This is a consumer-friendly bill that has had considerable thought and discussion with the administration, with the other body, and also with members from both parties. And I present this bill for the committee for consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith. At this point in time, are there any initial questions from members? Seeing none, we will move to public testimony. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this bill?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, there is an amendment. Would you like to deal with that later in the process?
Yes.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Twyla Braze. I am president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. We oppose the state implementation of Real ID and support the 2009 state law that today prohibits implementation of the federal driver's license called a Real ID. So there are three facts that I'd like to note as a basis of my comments on House File 3959. First, the bill allows the federal government to unconstitutionally commandeer state IDs and driver's licenses, giving us a federal ID and driver's license. Second, Minnesota is not required to implement Real ID. Homeland Security states Real ID is a voluntary program for the states. That's because the United States Constitution prohibits commandeering of the states. And third, Minnesotans can fly without Real ID. As evidence, the TSA provides 15 ID options, and there have been 5 deadline delays as Homeland Security tries to bluff state legislators into doing their own job, the federal job. And so far, as these maps show, here's a map of the compliant states. And here's a map of the non-compliant states. And what you'll notice here is that the orange states are the ones that are not compliant, but they have an extension. The yellow states, including Minnesota and six others, actually have laws prohibiting real ID. So some people have said Minnesota is the only one without real ID, but that's not correct. And then also Homeland Security writes in their final rule that individuals without a real ID compliant document will still be able to enter federal facilities and board commercial aircraft. And you had this one in your packet, so you can read it on your own so that you know that you actually can fly and the federal government doesn't prohibit it. So now I'd just like you to consider four questions that the public needs answered regarding identification cards, driver's licenses, costs, and freedom in Minnesota as a result of this bill. So the first question is, the Real ID Act gives the Secretary of Homeland Security the authority to expand official purposes beyond flight and federal buildings.
If you could please push your comments to what we're this Transportation Committee is looking for, like I say, rulemaking, data practices, all of those issues are, were both discussed in government operations and civil law. So we do have the discussion on the funding here, and I guess I'd ask for your comments to be confined to what we're talking about today.
Mr. Chair, I must ask you, this bill has 19 provisions that are related to transportation. This is a transportation policy committee. There has not been a transportation policy discussion. This committee is not limited to finance. This bill actually says, the first words of this bill say, a bill for an act relating to transportation. It would seem to me that they, since this is a policy committee, we should also have the right as citizens to talk about policy.
I understand that, Ms. Braze. If this was the first stop for this bill, I would fully agree with you. I believe that this bill has been vetted in two committees already on the House side and going to Ways and Means as well, so I believe that we've had this discussion. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, one more thing. If we only needed to do that, where there would be no need for additional committees. There are lots of people around this table here that have never had any part of the discussion that was in the last two committees. And this is their opportunity as Transportation Committee members to actually hear the policy concerns, which I believe is the purpose of the committees.
Thank you for your input.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the first question that we have is, what official purposes could the feds mandate for this federal driver's license and ID? And let me suggest it could be firearm and ammunition sales, beer and wine purchases, hotel registration, renting a car, accessing medical care, getting a credit card or access to your bank account. And it's really important for you to understand that the Secretary of Homeland Security is the only one who gets to decide what the official purposes can be expanded to be. The second question is, why should we have to register with the federal government to drive or fly or buy? And you are, with this bill, you're making the driver's license a federal ID for federal purposes as they decide and putting it under federal control. And citizens are forced to register and validate their U.S. citizenship through presentation of their birth certificates and Social Security cards with the federal government. The third question is, have you considered the card photographs? We just discovered that the state IDs, the state law on photographs is actually much more restrictive than the federal law. The state law doesn't allow the same type of sharing as the federal law. And when we're making this into the federal databases of Real ID and a federal ID card and federal driver's license, are we really protecting what our state law says? And the last question is, we doubt the department's lowball estimates. Illinois, with a population of 12.8 million, albeit nearly 2.5 times the size of our state, anticipates costs of $3.75 million each year just to verify birth certificates. The GAO reports a cost of 50 cents for each first and second verification check with the Alien Verification Database and $2 for the third check of an individual, as well as a 5 cent for every check of the Social Security data. In addition, Illinois expects a cost of $100 to $150 million just for staffing, equipment, and data storage. Furthermore, the state anticipates a cost of $50 to $60 million to update their systems. At one-third of the cost of Illinois, since we're smaller, We spend $1.5 million each year for verification, $33 to $50 million for staffing equipment and data storage, and $16 to $20 million to update our systems for a total cost of $50 to $75 million. So we're wondering, what is the true cost of Real ID for Minnesota taxpayers? In conclusion, we oppose the federal takeover of state IDs and state licenses and the taxpayer cost to fund that takeover. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on this? Please come to the testifying table. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Committee Chairman and members of the committee, my name is William Durkup and I'm from Monticello, Minnesota. Thank you for this opportunity. Mine is kind of short. I had prepared something, but I think I'm just going to refer to one thing here, I'll just read it, just real short. Non-compliant license and identification cards, the commissioner shall establish a license and a Minnesota identification card that does not meet all requirements of the Real ID Act. Well, I imagine this will be an expense that somebody might want to do away with, you know. And I was just wanting to support financing this non-compliant license so that people that do not want to comply fully with the Real ID Act would have an option of still being able to drive. So, in summary, I'm just simply asking that this not become a cost-cutting item. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any other member of the audience like to testify on this bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Don Olson. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services at the Department of Public Safety. My testimony today is in response to House File 3959. DPS will not be able to comply with the October 1 issuance date of this bill for the following reasons. Expedited rulemaking will take us approximately 6 months. If this bill is signed into law by the end of May, the earliest rules could be promulgated would be the end of November. Programming changes could not be made until rules are promulgated. At a minimum, programming changes to the legacy system is expected to take 4 months. Based on this timeline and barring no additional delays, the earliest we would be able to issue Real ID is the end of March in 2017. But most concerning is the delay that this would cause in the MNLAR system. We are on course to make the new motor vehicle system available for approved users by the end of this year. We would not be able to meet that timeline with an October implementation date. Regarding the auditing requirements, the new MNLAR system will have the same auditing features as defined in the bill. To make these programming changes to the current legacy system and in order for us to meet the requirements of the October implementation date, it will cost an additional $2.5 million or more to make on top of a system that is currently being prepared for shutting down. Our goal is to effectively move motor vehicle data from our current mainframe system to MNLAR's by the end of the year. Regarding data sharing being limited, data that is not currently disseminated out of state cannot be shared. No verification or validation that is currently being done could be done. This will impact the agreement with SAVE, which is a critical component of Real ID. And lastly, the driver and vehicle services accounts do not have the funding available to cover the costs associated with this bill. The April 15th planning report estimated that October 1 implementation would cost approximately $4.3 to $5.1 million. The additional programming to implement the auditing requirements would add an additional $2.5 million to this amount, as well as the need for additional staff, changes to our card vendor, and the additional training would bring the cost up to an additional $1.8 million. The current account balance forecasted for fiscal year 17 is a $1.6 million that the department anticipates will cover expenses for other types of services. The department remains committed to working with members and staff to ensure that legislation reflects the intent of the legislature and that it can be implemented. I'll stand for questions.
Ms. Olson, one of the issues back on April 16th when we were first discussing that, the estimation of the fiscal cost was $4 to $5 million in 2017. Can you explain it? Is it simply the audit portion that has increased that to $8 million?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'll start based on the fact that we put the plan together, and then I'll have Paul Meekin address any more technical questions around that. What we put together at that time on April 15th only accounted for changes that would have to be made to the legacy system in order to implement the Real ID requirements. We weren't aware of the potential of an audit requirement at that time. So it didn't include any additional funding for that.
So that's, Ms. Olson, is that that added the $2.5 million that audit itself, the audit capability to put that to the legacy system added $2.5 million?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, that's correct.
Any questions from members? Thank you for your testimony. Any other members of the audience like to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public testimony and move on to a couple of amendments. Representative Smith, you have an author's amendment, which is that A6 amendment. I will move the A6 amendment. I understand that is a technical correction, Representative Smith, to the A6 amendment?
Mr. Chair, correct it is.
All those in favor of the A6 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Okay. That motion prevails. The A6 amendment is adopted. And which one are we going to go to? Then we will move to A7. If you'd like, Representative Rinaldi.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to testify right here or bring my testifier?
If you have a testifier, she can
just go up there.
She can come to the table, certainly.
Okay, thank you. So the amendment that I bring before you, it was just brought to me about a week and a half or so ago, or 2 weeks, I'm not sure exactly, from the city of New Brighton. They've been working with, I believe, DPS to try to get this extended, and it was brought to my attention the need for it to be added to a bill this year, and so that's what I'm bringing before you. And I brought Brenda Davitt, and she's the finance director for the city of New Brighton, and she can talk to this, but I just want to just briefly tell you that New Brighton is an existing license bureau and has a limited driver's license appointment only, so it can make changes to your driver's license, or it can replacement or change of address, which I actually just did recently. So she's going to talk about what they would like to move forward to, and this quite a bit of support they have in the surrounding area for this.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for our committee record.
Sure. My name is Brenda Davitt. I'm the finance director for the city of New Brighton.
Okay. And please continue with your testimony.
All right. Thank you. The city of New Brighton would like to become a full driver's license agent. As Representative Bernardi has already spoken, we have currently hold a limited driver's license appointment, which only allows us to process replacement driver's licenses and changes of addresses. We currently receive numerous telephone calls, Facebook postings requesting that we become a full service driver's license agent. By allowing the city to become a full driver's license agent, our customers will gain an opportunity to have a one-stop experience and receive increased customer satisfaction. They will also appreciate an added office with convenient hours to visit if and with the passing of the Real ID bill. It will also help our residents to reduce the reliance on city property tax revenues to support our general government functions. To let you know, the city has received letters of support from other driver's license agents for this request. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I see that one of the cities I represent is one of those that's written in support. And because that's the one I use, I can tell you no matter what day or time you go there, there are, in fact, these long lines and waiting lists. So they say the additional hours and locations will help reduce wait times for all area license centers, including Roseville's, and they'll have more satisfied customers. So I can attest to the need here.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? I've talked with Representative Bernardi and to the testifier as well, and we feel that this may be an issue that we want to take up in our conference committee as opposed to moving on to this particular bill. So that's what we're not going to take action on this today, but we wanted to give you the opportunity to discuss it and to bring it forward.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you for that, and I appreciate that commitment to help make that happen, and I would like to withdraw my amendment today.
Thank you, Representative Bernard. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would like to move the DE3 amendment, and I can, Mr. Chair, briefly explain it. And
to your amendment, Representative Hornstein.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair and members. So, I think there's a variety of ways we can approach this issue, and this is what's known as a two-tier approach, where we kind of separate out the different ways to issue identification and driver's license. And so the purpose of the amendment and what it accomplishes is to give our people, to give Minnesotans just a few more options than this one card that we're going to implement very quickly. We've heard that the fiscal costs could be anywhere from $4 to $8 million. We have this now updated fiscal note that has $8 million. This will actually save that money by having a two-tier system. The other thing that this amendment does is it limits some of the federal impacts of this Real ID. We are able to implement it, so we'll be compliant with what the other states are doing, but we really maintain some autonomy here in Minnesota over some different aspects of this, which we can legally do under the Real ID Act. By moving the implementation to 2018, it allows for more public input, which is very important. We have many, many people from across the state and across actually the political spectrum that have a real interest in this. And so by moving this out to 2018, again, that moving that date out is not going to impact anyone's ability to fly or get on a military base, but it will allow for more public input. And then finally, Mr. Chair and members, time is running out here in the session, and obviously we'll go through a process here. The Senate has a process. The executive branch has their perspective on this issue. And this is not the Senate language. I want to let people know this is not the Senate language, but it does move us a little bit closer to that, and that might make things a little smoother in terms of getting this bill done as we all want it to get done this session. So, with that, that's sort of the general overview. I mean, I can certainly go through the individual provisions if you'd like, Mr. Chair. I can do that quite quickly, but if not, we can have a discussion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any questions from members? Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein and Mr. Chair, the question I have is, I understand the implementation costs, but what are the ongoing costs of maintaining two systems instead of one after Menlars comes on in 2018? What are the ongoing costs of maintaining two systems in lieu of one?
Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chair and Representative Howe, I think that one I would maybe defer to the department on that. I don't have those
Olson?
Figures at my fingertips.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as you know, we do have legislation in front of this legislature, this session, to talk about the maintenance fees for the Menlar system going forward. We've asked for an extension of that to be able to determine what those ongoing maintenance fees are going to be. Right now, because we're in this transition phase, we have more expenses that we need to work with before we can make a final determination of ongoing maintenance costs for Menlar's. And so that is part of our charge over the next 2 years, is to make that determination. As far as a dollar amount, if that is what you're asking more specifically, right now it costs us approximately $2.5 to $4 million just to maintain the mainframe system. That gets more expensive each year as more people go off and the costs become more concentrated in one area. So that's not as specific as probably what you're looking for, but that is the best information I have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in lieu of the Menlar system cost of maintenance, just to maintain this current system, it would cost us an additional, after 2018 when Menlar's comes online, it would at least cost us another $4 million to maintain the current system, because we'd have a two-tier system.
Ms. Holst.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I apologize if I misunderstood your question. Once Menlar's is fully implemented, we would only have one system. The mainframe would be shut down and go away. Those funds would be converted over into mainframe, the funds that we use right now. So there wouldn't be two systems. There would only be two systems in the interim, because we need to keep the driver services system up while we build that part of Menlar's. And once drivers is up and operational, then we can take the full mainframe down.
And the Menlar system would handle both the real ID and the driver's license, correct?
Mr. Chair, there would be no difference, but yes, everything would be handled in the one system.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the department, thank you for being here, because there are some, I think, clarifications and misinformation about it. If we go to a two-tier position here where we have two different types, what types of information will we be doing for one type of license and one for the other, or will this be basically the same information collected and requested of for both types of driver's license?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the information that would be requested would be the same. The only adjustment would be for us to work with the SAVE verification program, which is strictly an immigrant document verification system. So part of Real ID compliance is that we are in agreement, or we've entered an agreement with the federal government to verify that documents that are coming in from another country are true and accurate information. Currently we're the only state that does not work with that verification program. But there would be nothing outside of that would be different than what we do today.
Thank you. If I could follow up with that. So it sounds to me like currently under the legacy system or the old mainframe, we're collecting the same data already. If we go to a tool track, we're still going to be collecting it and using it for our execution of driver's license and implementation. And it's also currently into one database basically as well. So basically the only difference between Real ID and non-compliant ID is that there'll be a check mark somewhere on the form probably that says this is Real ID compliant and the other isn't, other than, as you said, the SAFE connection there. Is that correct?
Ms. Olson?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that would be correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand it, right now we have regular driver's license, we have the enhanced driver's license. Is that essentially doing where we have the two track in effect right now?
Ms. Olson?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, from my understanding, I believe two track is really more in reference to a Real ID program, that you have a compliant license and a non-compliant license. I think that's where the terminology comes from. And it sometimes can be a little confusing when you look at Minnesota, who has a standard but non-compliant driver's license and an EDL. They don't quite fit in that same kind of definition. So for purposes of clarity, and I think this is what people are using as a point of reference, is two-tier really means I have a compliant driver's license and I have a non-compliant driver's license. And an EDL is just something separate because that's a border crossing document.
Any other questions, Representative Mason?
Okay, given what you've said, but essentially you are still putting out two products. And if we had the real ID, and if we had another type of driver's license that wasn't quite up to the met the real ID, which I know some people seem to feel very strongly about, you're still, in essence, doing two different, putting out two different products. And would you also answer how many licenses do you actually put out in any event? Because what I'm getting is I don't think this is really that big a deal for your department.
Ms. Olson?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we, in fact, put out more than two different types of licenses. We have approximately 24 various types of licenses that we issue. That runs the gamut from under 21 to a CDL licensed driver and everything in between. So our current state and system is based on that. It's depending on the individual and their requirements and the kind of driving privileges that they're looking for. We issue a credential to match what that criteria is. Real ID just becomes another component to how we issue those licenses. To answer your question on how many do we issue annually, we issue approximately 1.5 million driver's licenses and ID cards.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to follow up on that last comment you made about the numbers of different licenses you offer. And this question is probably for the author. I don't know who it's for, but without this amendment, if the bill were passed without the amendment, what would happen to those other licenses that you offer?
Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the other licenses would stay the same. The Minnesota license that you use for driving would become the Real ID compliant. We're currently 74% in compliance with those requirements. So that one would be moved to the Real ID, and the other licenses would stay the same.
Any other questions? Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and either for the author or the department there, probably the department. From what we know about the federal Real ID standards, is it required that driving privileges be tied to the Real ID standards, or is that more of a convenience?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's not required. It's a federal requirement for identification documents. So it has nothing to do necessarily with the driving privileges.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks. I just thought it was related to the line of questioning that Representative Johnson had with the author. So, Representative Smith, are there more stringent regulations governing the non-compliant licenses in your original bill than in my amendment? I'm not clear on that.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, could you expand on your question? More stringent in what capacity?
Are there more stringent regulations, in terms of this grouping of non-compliant licenses? I guess if you could discuss in your bill, what are some of the regulations you have on that?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so currently there are a variety of documents you need to provide in order to get a driver's license today. The Real ID requirements would allow those same documents, plus when you get a license today, you need to give your Social Security card. The numbers are written down, and then the card's given back to you. Under Real ID, a photocopy of that card is taken. So the information is the same, but DPS would take a physical copy of it as opposed to writing down the numbers. The second item would be you need to have proof of your address, so a utility bill. The third item, representative, would be a signed affidavit that the information you're providing is correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Hurt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, then how is it our databases are the same? They're not the same. You got two different data banks there. One has a lot more data in it. You, as I understand it, everything is the same, no matter which one you issue. And we just eliminated a whole bunch of other stuff we got to have if we do a real ID.
Is that a question, Representative Hurt?
I just asked. Thank you.
Ms. Olson?
For the record, Paul Meekin, CIO for Minute Services at the Department of Public Safety.
Sure. Please proceed.
Yeah. Yeah. We would have just one database with this. If there are, and I don't have all the details in front of me as far as the attributes that we keep on both of them, other than at this general level, any additional information that we need to keep, we could extend that record in our database, but it would just be the single database for each of these types.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm still confused. If I have my driver's license, and when I get a renewal, it's really quite straightforward. I go get a renewal, and it's quite simple. I don't bring any documents with me except my old driver's license. If the bill passes without this amendment, am I to understand that I would not be able to do that again? So when it's time for renewal, I would have to provide additional information to just renew my license that I'm not doing now?
Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the renewal process would be the same as though when you initially apply for it. So every 4 years, you would have the same information that you submit when you initially bring forth your application for your driver's license.
Representative Johnson.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am clear then that if I just want to renew my license as I do now without any hassle, with you know, which is a fairly convenient system, I would not be able to do that. I would have to find the appropriate documents whether I ever wanted to fly or not.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it is the same information you would need to bring. So 4 years successively, you would need to bring that same information. So it is different from the sense to your question, whereas today you don't need to provide it. You provide it once at the beginning. The Real ID federal requirements are mandating that you bring that information every 4 years. There's certain exemptions and processes involved in regard to if you're missing something, but the answer to your question is every 4 years.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question then is, why did you select to have one tier when there's a lot of people who would, I really believe there's a lot of people who just prefer not to go through that inconvenience or that hassle. They don't have the documents. They don't intend to fly. They're very happy with their current license. So I just, why you've chosen to write the bill in that fashion?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, careful consideration was given to the different options. Many options were explored, more than what has been discussed here today. And after extensive conversations and very thorough research, it is my belief that the single track option is the most consumer friendly and the most efficient for our government to move forward in this capacity.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make one clarification.
Ms. Olson.
You do not need to bring those documents in. We ask one time when you make initial application. The only time you need supplemental information is if you had a change of address or your name was changed.
Thank you. Does that help? Representative Hornstein?
Well, Representative Johnson, again, asked the question that was on my mind, so I need to ask that additional.
Okay. So I guess just in clarifying for my own sake, then the process is very similar to your existing driver's license. You would supply those documents in the initial application, and then when you came back, unless something changed, you would just renew just like you do today.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Got it back to him. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the way you represented it, again, I don't think I have the same understanding from what I understood from the testimony from the author. Right now, when I renew my license, I don't have to bring any documents to the Driver's License Bureau other than my old driver's license. And they clip the corner, and I go, and I get my license in the mail. It takes me about 5 minutes, and it's convenience down the street. If we have only the one-tier system, when it's time for me to renew my license, I will not be able to renew my license in that fashion. Am I correct about that? I don't. I think that's different than what you just said, if I understood what you said, Mr. Chair.
And I didn't mean to put my opinion in, but I think we're talking about two different things. The initial application is what we're talking about.
I'm talking renewal.
Okay, yeah. Renewal. If you didn't go through the process at all, then you would have to initially bring the documents. Once you reapply and renew that real ID, you would not have to do that again. Right. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, and to either the department or to Representative Smith, so in regards to renewal, every 4 years under Real ID, does the Real ID act, is it silent to the user or the citizen having to re-authenticate themselves by bringing in these source documents each time? Or does it explicitly state that you don't have to do that? I'm just curious.
Representative Smith,
Mr. Chair, Representative, the federal Real ID requirements explicitly state that you need to bring the initial documents in for your first application and also all subsequent renewals.
Whoa. Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucero.
Okay, so just so I can be clear, because I know we're talking this couple different conversations.
No, it appears that we have some contradictory opinions here, so I understand your confusion.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, so I currently have a standard driver's license, and if this bill becomes law and we become single, everybody's mandated to get a driver's license under Real ID. The first time I do that, whenever my renewal period is up under its natural expiration, then I would need to bring in my source documents to authenticate myself to prove I am who I say I am, etc. And then each time after that, I have to bring in those same documents and undergo the same process. That's what I just want to make sure.
Thank you. Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, representatives, my apology if I could amend my answer. There is, for the initial renewal, for the initial process, for the initial application, you need to bring the same documents as you would get for your initial license, plus the utility bill, as that example, and sign the affidavit. For the renewal process, so 4 years later, you would not need any documents absent a change in your information.
We seem to be in agreement at the testifying table. Correct.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucero.
So then to that point, does the Real ID Act, does it explicitly state that you don't need to bring in the source documents on each subsequent renewal, or is it just silent on that particular issue?
Tim Smith?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the former.
Okay. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Olson, so in your estimates, maybe what you presented to us on April 14th, or maybe what you talked about earlier in terms of the additional costs, ostensibly when people bring in these source documents, there's going to be a lot of people that are coming into the driver's license office that would otherwise simply mail them in if it was just a normal renewal and we weren't doing Real ID. So have you considered the additional staff time to process all of these source documents? Ostensibly, everybody's going to have to do that once, where a large number of those people otherwise would not ever have to come into your office.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, on the driver's side of a renewal, everybody has to come in. We don't mail in. We need to see the individual in person in order to be able to issue a renewal. And to the second part about the costs of did we factor those in? Yes, we did. Into the our anticipation is we'll have a lot of questions from people when they come in because of, you know, not quite understanding, you know, what they should get and what's going to work for them. So we have factored in the need to have additional staff to work through those situations and be able to help people as they make those decisions. As far as the additional documents and information that we're going to have to capture, we do capture most of that information right now. So it's going to be some information, that additional documents that we'll capture, but nothing significant that we couldn't factor into our current operation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I was thinking about the license tabs, Ms. Olson. We have so many things we have to come in for. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thanks. So this whole discussion, I think, is very illuminating because I think it you know, affirms that there's certainly advantages for us to doing a two-track system. And I guess for DPS, I mean, under a two-track system, this is one of the key points, is do we maintain our autonomy here in Minnesota to do, you know, regulatory regimen for these non-compliant licenses under a two-track system?
Ms. Olson?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there is no change for us under either system.
Okay. And then what is your understanding of, you know, some of this? We were told that the Real ID Act federally is silent on some of this renewal, these renewal matters, but it's my understanding that they have a whole bunch of different mandates on us in terms of renewal. Are you familiar with that? Is it accurate to say that the federal Real ID Act is silent on the issue of renewal?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the Federal Real ID Act is not silent on the issues around renewal, but they have some very specific points that they draw out as to the renewal process or what they are recommending for states to implement. But I can't necessarily speak directly to the renewal process at this time.
Representative Hornstein.
So what would happen if the feds changed the law? What would happen then?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I suppose just like any other time the feds change the law, it would be a conversation we would have to come back and talk to committees about and explain what the change is and let you make that decision.
Okay, well, and actually then that would also apply to rulemaking, federal rulemaking as well.
Mr. Burris, may you help us with this?
Mr. Chair and members, as a point of clarification around future federal changes in the Real ID Act, both House File 3959 as amended and the DE3 amendment would place a limitation on the department to implement any future federal changes to the Real ID Act. So it would require a specific act of the legislature to permit any process or requirements type changes under both the proposed language here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Seeing none.
Chair, I don't know if we're ready to vote on the DE3, but I would ask for a roll call on the DE3.
Okay. Roll call being asked for. Representative Hornstein does renew his motion to move House or the eighth or DE3 amendment is what you're on. And a roll call being requested, we will take the roll.
Chairman Kelly.
No.
Vice Chairman Petersburg.
No.
Representative Chad Anderson.
No.
Representative Mark Anderson.
No.
Representative Adkins.
Aye.
Representative Bernardi.
Yes.
Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Earhart.
Yes.
Representative Hausman.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Howe.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
No.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Norton?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Sanders?
No.
Representative Sundin?
Yes.
Representative Uglum?
No.
Representative Whalen?
No.
There being 14 nays and 9 ayes, the motion does not prevail. The DE3 is not approved. We will move to, seeing no other amendments to the bill, we'll move to House File 3959 as amended to that. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate your vote on and your support on this bill. As I mentioned before, there has been a lot of discussion on both sides of the aisle with both chambers and the administration, and I believe this is the best bill to make our licenses compliant with the federal ID system. We're 74% of the way there. This is the most government efficient and consumer friendly way to go, and I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, very much appreciated the debate we had on our DE3 amendment and disappointed that it didn't pass. And I just want to remind the committee that, now that we're, to the bill, which is a one-tier system, as soon as we're out of compliance potentially, with anything that, is with the feds, we're back to square one. We're back to doing this process all over again, and that is one of several reasons why I think we're just ceding so much power to the federal government on this issue. And my amendment was really designed to balance that problem and to maintain some autonomy here for the state of Minnesota and our legislator and our agencies and our citizens. So, that's one of the reasons why I have concerns. I think there's a pathway to get done what we need to get done, but with quite a bit more autonomy and less intrusion. So, with that, and Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's additional comments, but I would encourage, for that and other reasons that I elucidated when I introduced my amendment, would encourage a no vote, and I would like to have a roll call on the final bill.
Thank you. Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Smith, I appreciate your presentation and all the information you shared. And you and I have chatted a bit. I know Real ID has at least 4 more stops, another committee of 4 vote, conference committee of 4 vote. And I'm not sure the best path forward. I'll be voting it through this committee, but I do have many, many concerns. Some have already been highlighted by testifiers and other members. And so just out of respect for the committee process, I'll vote for it and look forward to continuing the conversation and really hope that we can improve this. Again, I'm not sure the best path forward, but I just wanted to share my thoughts. And again, thank you, Representative Smith, for your openness and conversations that we've had prior to this.
Representative, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, I've expressed my concerns on the bill and would just encourage you to continue working with the stakeholders as we move forward. And I'm happy to work with you on some of the concerns that I've got and appreciate the fact that you've had an open door policy.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I keep thinking, I was trying to get at during the questions, is that I don't think this is the consumer-friendly way to do it. I have the problem with the one tier, and I think the second tier makes sense. I really think that there's a lot of people in my district that say, I don't intend to fly, or if I fly, I'll use my passport. I just don't want to bother doing this, and I think a consumer-friendly approach would allow the renewal of my license just like I always have done, and that was easily available to us in the amendment, and so it's because of that that I can't support the bill.
All right, roll call has been requested. We will take the roll.
Chairman Kelly.
Yes.
Vice Chairman Petersburg.
Yes.
Representative Chad Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Mark Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Atkins.
No.
Representative Bernardi.
No.
Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Earhart.
Yes.
Representative Hausman.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Howe.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Nay.
Representative Koznick.
Yes.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative Norton.
Pass.
Representative Runbeck.
Yes.
Representative Sanders.
Yes.
Representative Sundin.
No.
Representative Uglum.
Yes.
Representative Whalen.
Yes.
Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to vote in favor of moving this bill at this time. And I just need to say on record, you know, I have the largest employer in my state asking me to vote yes on this, but I do have concerns and think we should have a discussion in conference committee. So I'm voting yes at this time, but I have reservations.
Thank you. There being 14 ayes and 9 noes, that the motion prevails, and the bill will be moved to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, not sure if we will have to meet again, but there is two individuals we did not thank before, our researchers, Nancy Conley, Brian Perl. We certainly appreciate your work with us throughout this committee. Thank you. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.